if you're a great media company, you will be making astonishing media that people will want to go and read and that can't be made into a one paragraph, one tiny, you know, snippet from Google.
Echte Insights aus der Medienbranche. Hier sind deine Innovation Minutes, direkt aus dem Media Lab Bayern.
James Gritland schaut sich die Auswirkungen neuer Plattformen und Technologien in der Medienbranche an. Das Ganze nennt sich dann Radio-Zukunftsforscher. Und was er so sieht und erkennt, das teilt er im täglichen Podcast-Newsletter namens PodNews. Heute ist er bei mir zu Besuch und gemeinsam reden wir über die Auswirkungen von KI im Radio zum Beispiel, aber auch so ganz allgemein, wohin die Reise geht. Wir werfen einen Blick in die Zukunft. Mein Name ist Sabrina Harper, ich bin die Host der Innovation Minutes und das ist mein Gast James Gritland. Hello, James.
Hello, Sabrina. It's good to be here.
So great to have you here.
Yeah, it's great to be here in this wonderfully echoey room in the middle of
yes,
the
I'm
Munich
sorry
Messe.
For that, but that was what I got at the Radio Days Europe.
Good.
But I think we come along and maybe some AI
maybe.
Can solve this.
Yes, maybe. Who knows?
You look at the media industry and try to find conclusions for the future. How can I imagine that?
Well, so I've worked in radio for 35 years or so, and I think one of the things that I am noticing now more than ever is that there is a big change in terms of consumption. The way that we listen to radio, the way that we consume audio in all of its different forms is really changing. And so I think, you know, I've been looking at that. I've been working out where the industry is going, what the industry needs to do, particularly radio, needs to do to make sure that it's relevant for the next 20, 30 years. And so that's why I come to this conference every single year and speaking on all kinds of things.
All the way from Great Britain.
Actually, all the way from Australia.
From Australia?
I know, yes. I am a Brit, but I moved to Australia 7 or 8 years ago. And yes, and so I've had a long, long, long journey.
So thanks for being here. I was at Texas recently and I visited a seminar by Amy Webb. Of course, you know Amy Webb, Future Forecast. And it was a lot about signals and then it comes to trends and you can recognize them and then you make conclusion about the future or you try to make conclusions about the future.
Yeah.
Do you also have like a set of methods or how you look at things?
I mean, really, you know, if you're just focusing in on radio and the audio industry, to me, it's getting as much research as you possibly can. There's lots of research that goes on both in Germany and in the rest of Europe, and of course in the US as well. And so looking at what that research is saying, looking at what that might mean for us as content creators, as people who are monetizing audio content, and then, you know, really the solution as to what to do next is relatively clear from what you can see actually happening in real life.
So, and one thing, if you look at the research and if you look at the radio nowadays, is AI.
Yes.
What you think about AI in the media industry?
So, you know, nobody's mentioned AI at all in this conference.
No. Nobody's talking about AI.
Obviously, it's the only thing that anybody wants to end up talking about. I call AI an artificial intern. It's an additional member of staff that you have to do the simple and straightforward stuff that doesn't need much human, connection, that doesn't need much creativity. And I think AI is very good at doing that. So, you know, feed it a long news article and say, please, could you write this long news article in 3 sentences, please? And AI will do a very good job of that. AI will do a very good job of doing, you know, cloned voices and fixing a mistake that you might have made when you recorded a podcast, and it can actually fix that in post and all of that kind of stuff that AI can do very well. From that side, AI is a very good thing. If you treat it as an additional member of your team that you still have to check before you broadcast it, before you publish it, that makes a bunch of sense. I think the other side of it is that people are using AI or thinking that they can use AI to replace creative work, to replace creative people and creative thinking. And AI is absolutely not built for that. And we shouldn't be using it for that. All that AI is, in very basic terms, is it's the same autocomplete that is on your iPhone keyboard. That's all that AI really is. It's just building sentences based on what it thinks might make a little bit of sense. So from that point of view, absolutely fine to use it for simple, straightforward stuff to free you up for more creativity. But to use it to replace creativity, to me at least, I don't recommend that as a thing at all.
As you already mentioned, AI didn't just pop up out of nowhere. When was the first time you were thinking about AI in the media industry?
Well, I think, you know, I mean, AI depends what you mean by AI, of course. But, you know, I was in the radio in late 1980s, early 1990s, and instead of the radio DJs choosing their own music, a computer started choosing that from a long and complicated algorithm. That, frankly, is much the same as AI. Choosing songs, making sure that the flow of music on a radio station is right. And really, you know, that's been the first time where we have gifted a bit of the creative work to a computer to end up doing. And, you know, it's just been sort of, you know, slowly building. I think we've just seen a massive change over the last year with tools like ChatGPT, but also, you know, the fact that you can get an API into ChatGPT. So you can get other things using that artificial intelligence and plugging that into your own systems. All of a sudden, you begin to be able to build all kinds of exciting things with that.
You do a daily podcast about media and what's going on. So besides AI, what are your topics?
Well, so the daily podcast that I do is called Pod News. It's Pod News Daily, which is a 4 or 5 minute podcast every single day about what's going on in the podcasting world. And there's a weekly, much longer form version that's normally just over an hour long. And really, you know, one of the things we're looking at in terms of the podcast industry are the changes in podcasting, the changes in that form of media, whether it's Spotify stopping using exclusives. Its plan for the last 3 years has been to buy lots of podcasts, to make those podcasts exclusive for Spotify and Spotify only. And now those podcasts are available everywhere again, because Spotify has realized that actually that's better for creators, is to make sure that the content is available everywhere.
Sorry for interrupting, but is it better for Spotify?
It is, because Spotify is selling advertising in those podcasts. And so all of a sudden, they can reach far more people. Spotify, you know, depending on what you look at, Spotify has somewhere in the region of 15 or 20% of all podcast downloads. And it's got more users, but actually about that in terms of downloads. And so therefore, if it can essentially take the number of downloads it's getting and times that by 4, then it can make much more money out of the advertising there. So that's their plan, you know, in terms of that.
Okay, thanks.
Yes. So we've seen that as a change, but we've also seen, I think, you know, charitably, a bit of an overheating of the podcast industry in the US. There was an awful lot of free money that you could get hold of in the US over the last couple of years. Those days have drawn to a close, and all of a sudden that's meant that companies have been very keen to work out how they're going to make money now. And that has resulted in a lot of projects being closed, a lot of people losing their jobs, very sadly. 3,200 people lost their jobs at Spotify alone last year. So you can see that there's big changes going on, mostly in the US, much less changes going on here in Europe, because we didn't overheat the economy in the same way as the US did. But that's, you know, another thing that we've you know, always got our eye on in terms of the podcast industry.
What do you think about the future of traditional media, I call it, like radio, TV, or newspaper, magazines? What do you think about this?
I mean, newspapers and magazines, I can't see a long-term future for those at all. And indeed, I'm quite surprised at the amount that are still out there. They're certainly not making much money. And so they're probably there for, you know, their owners to get a little bit of, you know, get their thinking into the public rather than much more. But if you have a look at radio, which is the thing that I talk about most, you can see that radio by itself is actually doing pretty well. Still, 9 out of 10 people are listening to the radio every week in most countries. So you can look at that and you can go, well, radio's fine. But then if you have a look at both the time spent listening to radio and also the type of people who are listening to radio, you notice two things. You notice, firstly, that the amount of time that we are spending with radio is decreasing because there's so much other choice out there. But also, radio is turning into an old person's medium. Younger people, by and large, aren't catching the radio bug. And they're not listening to the radio when they're 15. And that means that in 10 years, they won't be listening to the radio when they're 25 either, and 35 and so on. So we're seeing that radio is getting much, much older. And I think one of the things that I'm disappointed in is that the radio industry, by and large, seems to have no solution to that other than, well, you know, we should think of a strategy.
Do you have an idea?
Yeah, I mean, I would look at the way that audio is being consumed, and that is now more than ever on-demand content. Young people mostly listen to audio on their mobile phones. Over 50% of young people's audio time is spent listening to something on their handy, something on their mobile phone. So that points to a couple of things. But firstly, make sure that your content is available on a mobile phone. But secondly, that doesn't necessarily mean just put your live radio station on there, because that is not a great experience when you've got Spotify or Apple Music or Deezer or whatever it might be on your phone, and you've got 4.2 million podcasts, because there are 4.2 million podcasts. So if you've got those two things, then giving people a stream of audio that they can't change, that they can't skip past a song that they don't like, that has 12 minutes of adverts every hour, all of that kind of stuff just doesn't work. And so we need to be very much cleverer in terms of using our audio, making audio not for live first, which radio has always historically done, but thinking about audio as an on-demand medium. Use it on the radio, yes, absolutely, but build your audio so that it works in terms of on-demand. Make it available in as many different ways as possible. And actually then just focus on a distribution strategy, which is live and linear radio for anything with a loudspeaker. So a traditional radio, you know, a TV, you know, there are plenty of radio stations that you can get on your TV, and smart speakers too.
Smart speakers. Mm. I was thinking about smart speakers. I only consume radio via smart speakers.
Yeah, me too. I don't own a radio at home now, actually, which is a very strange thing for somebody that's worked in radio for 35 years. And I think partially one of the problems that we have in the English language, at least, is that radio can mean a type of audio programming that we all understand what a radio show is when we listen to that. Or radio can mean a type of, you know, transmitter. I think we sit there and we are too concerned about what's going on with the transmitters, just like newspapers were too concerned about their printing presses, whereas actually we should be more concerned about the content that we have and being able to actually, you know, allow our audience to find our content wherever they want to consume that particular content, which is why you're seeing a lot of radio companies being very excited about podcasting, being very excited about the opportunities that that actually offers. But I think it's more than just launch a podcast. I think it's actually a radical change in the way that you make radio, moving away from the primacy of live radio and moving to something which is very much more built for on-demand audiences that happens to also use a radio broadcast as a way of getting to audiences.
From your point of view, is radio about music still?
I think that's a great question, because I think there are two types of radio stations out there. One of them is very speech-heavy radio, and those particular radio stations are doing actually really well. Spoken word radio, the amount of spoken word radio that we listen to is on the up, is increasing. The amount of spoken word as a whole that we listen to is increasing as well. And then you have music-intensive radio stations that play 10 great songs in a row. And I cannot see where there is a long-term future for a radio station which is just somebody else's music as a jukebox. That, to me, is a really obvious thing that we need to change. Now, that's not saying that music radio is bad. You know, I mean, RTL 102.5 in Berlin has a fantastic breakfast show that lots of people listen. It's a music station, but it's got a fantastic breakfast show that lots of people have a listen to. There's a lot of spoken word on there. It does fantastically well. So I'm not saying that music radio is bad, but I'm saying that music-intensive radio, non-stop music, really doesn't have... The only thing keeping it alive really is cars. And as we get rid of our old petrol cars and we move on to electric cars, we'll have much more electric stuff in the car, much more connections to on-demand audio and everything else. And I think that will accelerate the decline of radio.
If I get it right, it's about personality. So if a certain person picks the music, maybe you like the music because you like the person. But if you do like random music, like 10 songs in a row, you don't see that much future. Is it right? Or did I get it right?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, the choice of music is one thing. I think it's actually just the human being that is in between those songs. You know, that's probably more important. And I have a definition of radio, which is not, you know, a type of programming or a way of broadcasting it or a device even. What I think radio is it's a human connection with a shared experience. That's what makes radio different to everything else available. It's that human connection. You know that there's a person there. You know that that person is probably your friend and is wanting to help you and give you information and everything else. And that shared connection is really important as well. Knowing that you're not alone with that person, knowing that, you know, you're part of a club. You're listening to something that hundreds of thousands of other people are listening to as well. And I think once you have a look at that human connection and that shared experience, there's none of that with a radio station that just plays 10 great songs in a row. But there's plenty of that if it's, you know, if it's Arno in the Morning or whoever it might be, there's plenty of human connection and shared experience. And that's what makes radio and continues to make radio a really great thing for audiences all over the world.
I get this point, but... Isn't it the same feeling when you're listening to a podcast, like a personality podcast? It also makes you feel like you're in a club.
Yeah, absolutely. And a great podcast is still great radio. Because remember, radio is nothing to do with transmitters anymore. Radio is nothing to do with actually being live anymore. Radio is content that we make available. We might broadcast it live. We might make it available on demand. That might be as a podcast. It might be in our radio station app. It might be in, you know, the ARD app. It might be in the BBC app or the NRK app. So, you know, radio can be available in all of those ways. And I think where we go wrong in these sorts of conferences is we only consider a big transmitter in the middle of a field somewhere warming up the sheep, and we should probably be considering the content and the audience who is actually tuning into it.
Thanks for making that clear. Another thing I want to talk with you is big tech. So you have all Google and Meta and whatever, and it seems like they faster in transformation when it comes to media. Do you agree?
I think certainly some of those big companies are faster in terms of changing some of the apps that they build and things like that. Very few of those companies are actually making any content, of course. And that's, you know, one of the most important sides. I mean, I think, you know, if you were to look at each of those, I think that Google has lost its way in the last 10 years. It hasn't actually launched anything big since Gmail. There's been no big thing that it has launched, apart from, of course, Google Plus, which it then closed, or Google Glass, those fancy glasses, which it then closed. It's pretty well not launched anything, really, for the last, certainly for the last 10 years. So Google really has sadly lost its way in terms of a lot of the things that it's been working on. But I think, you know, at the end of it, actually, none of these companies are producing content. They're helping point people towards that content. And some people, I think, in the media industry think that Google is competing with them. Google is giving you big free signposts to your content. Google is doing a fantastic job in promoting media companies and getting people to find the content that you have built. So Google doesn't deserve to be fined for that or charged for that or anything else. Google and Facebook and the other services are doing a great job of pointing to your content. But that's what Google and Facebook and Apple do. They don't produce content. They don't sit there and have 200 journalists doing investigative, you know, journalism, which... And no investigative journalism will ever get paid by ad banners, you know, and clicks and those sorts of things. So, you know, I think it's an interesting comparison looking at the speed of change with the big tech companies and speed of change with media companies. But actually, you know, there is a lot to be said for not changing media particularly fast. We're a very habitual, you know, thing. We wake up to the same radio station every day. We listen to the same radio station in the car. You make very fast changes at your peril there because you don't want to push people away and make them feel uncomfortable and as if they're somewhere new.
I do agree partly. You're right when you're saying they're not doing content, but people consume content on Google. They don't go to the source where it comes from. That's a big problem for media outlets.
Well, I mean, if people are only... The only thing available on Google is a headline and one paragraph.
And you have that snippet stuff?
Yeah, headline and one paragraph. If the content that you think that you have an exclusive on can be summarized in a headline and one paragraph, then that is the media's problem. That's not Google's problem. That is the media's problem. If you're not offering anything additional, any additional reporting, any additional context, any additional information that the audience wants to go and read, and your entire job is essentially retyping somebody else's press release and then sticking it on a page with a couple of ads on there, which, by the way, you'll be selling through Google, because pretty well all media companies sell their ads through Google anyway. If that's all that you're doing, then you deserve to fail. You know, as a media company, as a media organization, if you're a great media company, you will be making astonishing media that people will want to go and read and that can't be made into a one paragraph, one tiny, you know, snippet from Google.
How would you define astonish?
Astonishing content.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you know, content that is your own work that tells the audience something that they didn't already know, that perhaps holds people to account, that perhaps is something that they wouldn't have already known if they had not come and read or listened to what you're actually working on. Yeah.
Okay, so people, now you know. Thank you very much for your time, James.
It's been a great pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. And, you know, I would say, if you're interested in the whole podcast world, podnews.net is free and comes out every day.
I will put it in the show notes. So, du hast es gehört, die kritische Stimme von James. Wie geht's dir damit? Hat er damit recht oder sagst du eher, nein, nein, Google ist es schon böse, oder sind wir wirklich selber schuld in den Medien, wenn es nicht klappt, dass die Leute zu uns kommen? Lass mir gerne dazu ein paar Gedanken da. Schreib's mir entweder ins Q&A auf Spotify oder schreib mir eine Mail, sabrina@media-lab.de. Social Media geht natürlich auch. Und wenn du mehr zu Zukunft und Medien erfahren willst, dann hör doch einfach in unsere vorherigen Folgen rein. Es gibt ein paar deutsche, es gibt ein paar englische, findest du dann raus. Und ganz, ganz toll wäre es, wenn du diesen Podcast abonnierst, damit du keine neue Folge mehr verpasst. Ich wünsche dir auf jeden Fall eine gute Zeit und wie immer viel Erfolg mit allem, was du tust.
Das waren deine Innovation Minutes, direkt aus dem Media Lab Bayern. Du willst mehr? Dann besuche uns auf media-lab.de und starte dein eigenes Projekt.
Last but not least, dieser Podcast ist möglich, weil wir tolle Unterstützer und Unterstützerinnen haben. Besonderer Dank geht an die Staatskanzlei Bayern, die Bayerische Landeszentrale für neue Medien BLM und natürlich an meine Kollegen und Kolleginnen in der Medien Bayern.